Thank you very much to the organizers for giving me the opportunity to say a few words here on Arctic ocean dynamics and its linkages with lower latitudes. Please be prepared that I will not be able to give a complete overview over everything which is relevant here, but I will try to pick out a few examples which I found find interesting and with a certain bias to work where I have been involved myself, I must admit. So we'll see. Oops. Can we have another look at the projection? Maybe it's a problem if I'm using this tool for. Okay. It worked when we tested it, so I was. Sorry about that. So maybe I start with a few words already. What I want to do first is give you a brief overview for those of you who are not familiar with the Arctic Ocean circulation. Thank you. How it generally looks like, because I will refer to that later on. So one of the very important characteristics of the Arctic Ocean is that it's a very strictly layered system. We have the sea ice cover on top, and then the uppermost ocean layer, which is very fresh and cold, reaches down to approximately 100 to 200 meter maximum. And then below that, we have a very warm and saline core, which circulates down to depths of about 800 meter. The surface circulation features, we have two of them which are the most prominent ones. One is the big gyre called the Beaufort gyre, covering different parts depending on the actual climate situation of the Eurasian basin, which is the western part of the Arctic. And we have the so-called transpolar drift, which is moving water from the shelves mostly to Fram Strait. The upper layer is fed by inflow from the rivers, the Arctic rivers, mostly draining onto the shelf areas, which are rather shallow, the Barents Sea, the Kara Sea, and the East Siberian Sea over here. We also have an opening in the Bering Sea, to the Bering Sea, the Bering Strait, into through which we have an inflow of relatively low saline water into the upper layers of the Arctic Ocean as well. Then we have an outflow of this fresh water through Fram Strait between Greenland and Spitsbergen, into the East Greenland Current, further on to the Denmark Strait, and then moving into the northern North Atlantic. Finally, after moving through the Labrador Sea, being part of the subpolar gyre. We also have an outflow of fresh water through the Canadian archipelago. Now, below this fresh surface layer, we have the Atlantic water layer, which, as the name suggests, is fed by inflow from the Atlantic, which is rather saline and warm. It moves through the Barents Sea, where we have a big heat loss. It encounters sea ice. We have the process of deep water formation there, and the water sinks below the upper layer circulation and circulates on cyclonic loops through the different basins, as is sketched approximately here in these red colors. all of this water is leaving through Fram Strait then, through which we also have some inflow of warm water on the eastern side. Now, the basic features of this circulation pattern have been known for some time. It has also been known that we have a variability of this circulation system, which has a number of implications. And I will start saying a little bit about the variability of this surface circulation and the mid-depth circulation. I will also refer then to the freshwater storage of the Arctic circulation system, mostly referring to the Beaufort Gyre here, and its storage and release mechanisms as far as we think we have understood it. I will also talk about the warm and saline inflows. Sorry, there's a word missing here, and their variability and their implications, and about the outflows at mid-depths and how they communicate with the more southern areas. So once again, the surface circulation, this basic pattern with the Beaufort Gyre and the transpolar drift is variable on yearly to decadal time scale, with the Beaufort Gyre at times being very small and the transpolar drift more being in a diagonal position across the Arctic Ocean, which has a number of implications for not only for the transport of heat and the size of the Atlantic layer domain, or the domain dominated by Atlantic water, but also on freshwater content, the freshwater content on the Arctic Ocean, the largest part of which is stored in the Beaufort Gyre. One of those modes of circulation, which is known for some time now and has been intensively investigated by Andrei Proshutinsky, who is also going to give a presentation today, is are the two modes of circulation driven by different intensities of the Beaufort Sea, high sea level pressure over the central Arctic Ocean, imposing a surface stress curl which dominates, which leads to cyclonically dominated and anticyclonically dominated phases of the Arctic Ocean circulation, shown here in blue and red over a period from the 1950s to 2010. This time series has been derived from a model responding to the atmospheric sea level pressure changes over time, and we can see that we have periods of a duration of 5 to 15 years over the time. And Andre and his colleagues have suggested that in periods where we have a strong anticyclonically dominated circulation, there will be a storage of fresh water in the Beaufort Gyre and a release of that in times of and cyclonically dominated circulation. And in fact, we find a lot of indications for that, this just being an example for the decadal scale variability of the freshwater content in the Beaufort Gyre, in the Beaufort Sea, the area where most of the Beaufort Gyre activity takes place, from the 50s over the 70s to the 90s and 2000s. And you already can see that we find in observations a strong increase of freshwater in the Beaufort Gyre area. Now, more recent studies have been trying to make use of the, all available hydrographic data in the in all of the Arctic Ocean deep basins. Here, a work by Benjamin Rabe from the Alfred Wegener Institute, comparing the period of the IPY 2006 to 2008 in terms of freshwater content in the Arctic with an earlier period in the early 90s, showing a strong increase of roughly 8,000 cubic kilometers over these two periods. This compares relatively well given the uncertainties of the observations with model simulations we have been doing at the Alfred Wegener Institute. Now, can we find any indications? I think there's a cable which... Ah, it doesn't matter. Okay. Okay, it doesn't look like it wouldn't matter. So, sorry. So can we find any indications in changes of observed fluxes through the gateways? This is from a recent publication by Hain and co-authors trying to summarize the current state of knowledge regarding freshwater exchanges in the Arctic Ocean. And sorry for the small legend, but the middle panel shows you the sum of all lateral exchanges in the ocean, the different in and outflows and runoff and precipitation, summing up to an increased storage of freshwater in the Arctic Ocean in the later period. Now, if we look into onto the shorter time scales, Benjamin Rabe has more recently tried to estimate on a yearly basis the behavior of the freshwater content in the Antarctic deep basins from 1992 to 2012, which are shown here as green stars. And you can see that we have roughly an increase of about 10,000 cubic kilometer of freshwater from the early 90s to the 2012, with a strong increase in the early 2000s and a kind of leveling off in the more recent years. Again, we compare this with model observations to use the model for further analysis of the dynamics of this. The observational analysis indicates that about two-thirds of this freshwater increase is due to changes of the salinity in the upper layer and about one-third by thickness changes of the freshwater layer in the at the surface. Now, can we identify which atmospheric circulation patterns are actually likely driving the changes of the freshwater content in the Arctic Ocean deep basins? This is an analysis showing the comparing the detrended freshwater content in red dots over this time period with the cumulative indices of the Arctic oscillation, the Arctic Ocean oscillation, which is this index from showing the cyclonic and anticyclonic circulation in the Arctic shown before, based on Andre's work, and also the Arctic dipole pattern. And as it turns out, it is in fact this Arctic Ocean oscillation pattern based on the Beaufort high variability, which has the largest impact on the freshwater content, also on the interannual to pentadal time scale, and not only on the decadal time scale, as we've seen before. Now we can use the model. We have seen this later period shown in green here just before. We can use the model to get a longer time scale perspective of the freshwater content changes. This is a coupled ice ocean model driven with a ENSEP reanalysis atmospheric data, and it shows the variability of the freshwater content in the entire Arctic and the deep Arctic, the deep basins in blue and red respectively, with some offset to have them on the same level. And as it appears, we in fact have over the long time scale periods of freshwater increase and release on timescales of up to 10 years to 15 years, and in addition to that, a very large loss of freshwater in the 1990s, followed by this strong increase in the 2000s. Now, we can identify the causes of these increases, in fact, as this variability, in fact, as being based on the changes of the wind stress curl in the Arctic Ocean, and we can also try to identify this strong release of freshwater here And this has been done in a study where we have been looking at the freshwater content changes and the hydrographic changes in the central Arctic in the 1990s, following the high state of the Arctic Ocean oscillation, leading to a complete restructuring of the hydrographic situation in the Arctic and a strong release of freshwater through the gateways to the North Atlantic, which also was found in observations. Here we see the salinity anomaly in Denmark Strait, in the outflow from the Arctic in the upper ocean layers, identifying two periods of very large or very low saline freshwater, high freshwater releases in the 70s associated with the Great Salinity Anomaly, mostly due to ice export from the Arctic, and also a strong release in the 1990s associated with the high state of the AO and NAO in the 1990s. Now, if we go back to these periods of storage and release over the entire time period, and showing here mean values for periods where we have mostly positive freshwater content change, which is a storage, and a negative one, which is the release, we can identify the latter period with this strong increase as one where this freshwater content change in the model simulation is approximately to the same extent being driven, being compensated in terms of fluxes by changes in the export with an increased outflow and with a decreased outflow and an increase of surface flux, mostly due to ice melt. And then again, we can trace this back to the wind stress curl anomalies over the Arctic and more specifically the Eurasian basin where the Beaufort Gyre is sitting. Now, do these strong changes of or these changes of freshwater content, especially the large increase in the last years and the intensification of the Beaufort Gyre, have any effect on the deeper water layer in the Arctic Ocean? Well, we can in fact see that we had a period of a very strong Ekman pumping as a consequence of the high wind stress curl anomaly in the late 2000s, approximately strongest after 2004, and this was the period when the Beaufort Gyre has been storing a lot of fresh water and has becoming very large. So, about the mid-depth circulation, can we find this? Can we find an impact of the changes in the upper water layer onto the mid-depth circulation? We have investigated the mid-depth circulation also by using anthropogenic tracers to trace the circulation patterns in the Arctic Ocean. Here shown as the concentration of this anthropogenic tracer iodine 129 at a depth of 240 meter in the upper Atlantic water layer, which has the advantage of having observations in the 1990s and 2000s, so we can compare this with the model results. And in fact, we do see that comparing the early period where we have a very strong circulation of Atlantic water in a cyclonic sense, as shown as the kind of canonical circulation pattern in the past, we do have a very strong change in the later period of the 2000s, of the first decade of the 2000s, which we associate with the changes in the Ekman pumping in the Beaufort Gyre, the intense circulation of the Beaufort Gyre, and a complete change of circulation system in the Eurasian basin, so that we would suggest a changed circulation pattern in the Eurasian basin. And the question is, do these changes in mid-depth circulation have any consequences for the outflows at mid-depth, which leave through Farm Strait and finally feed into the overflows and are part of the meridional overturning circulation. Now, coming back to inflows. It has been observed since some time that the inflows into the Nordic seas and finally the Arctic Ocean have been showing strong temperature increases in the last decades. These are observations along the pathway of the Atlantic water moving into the Nordic seas and the Arctic from roughly 1950 to 2008. Most of these are accompanied by salinity increases, so we have a density-compensated inflow. But in fact, calculating the density compensation for the last decades in Fram Strait, we see that two very strong warm anomalies from the 1990s and the 2000s did not have not been density compensated, but dominated by temperature increases. So we have density anomalies passing into the Arctic Ocean, and we have used these are observations. Sorry to forget to mention this in red, and the model simulations in black. And we are using the model to follow these density anomalies in the Arctic circulating and returning to the Denmark Strait, where they potentially impact the overflows. And in fact, we do see that as a consequence of the lowering of the interface height of the overflows at the sills in conjunction with theory, we in fact do have a decrease of the overflows in the model simulation once these signals are arriving there. This is based on a continuation of the model with two atmospheric circulation patterns in the past, because we had to assume certain circulation patterns for this coupled ice ocean model. So we do find this impact. Now, in a more recent study by Johann Jungklaus and co-authors, they have used a fully coupled climate model to investigate the heat inflow to the Arctic Ocean over the past millennium and confirm a strong increase in the last decade of heat into the Arctic Ocean, trying to separate the cause for this increase into the part being due to an increase of the meridional overturning versus an increase of the gyre circulation, the horizontal gyre circulation in the subpolar gyre, finding that the gyre circulation has been the dominant factor as the cause for the increased heat inflow in the latter part of the 20th century. This 20th century trend can also be seen in the vertical section of the meridional overturning stream function, exhibiting a negative trend of the meridional overturning in the southern part of the North Atlantic, and an increase of the meridional overturning trend in the northern part. And looking into the gyre circulation, we can find an increase of the subpolar gyre, shown here in negative values of the horizontal stream function, they have been identifying a mechanism which is responsible for this increase of the subpolar gyre, and then finally increase of heat advection into the Arctic Ocean by working in a way that a reduced deep water formation in the Labrador Sea leads to a weaker overturning and then an accelerated subpolar gyre as a consequence of that is transporting heat to high latitudes. The conclusions of those aspects which I have been mentioning here, we do realize that the Arctic Ocean circulation at the surface and at mid-depths are very variable. In contrast to earlier perceptions, there's a very strong link between the surface circulation and the mid-depth circulation, and in fact a decoupling of the different Arctic Ocean basin circulations at depths seems feasible or seems to happen. This may have consequences for the outflows from mid-depths into the Arctic Ocean. We also find that the freshwater content variability is largely driven by surface fluxes and the atmospheric circulation in terms of, namely in terms of the Arctic oscillation and the local wind stress curl over the Amerasian Basin. We find we can state that observations and model results show an increase of the freshwater content over the over almost the last two decades of the order of magnitude of 10,000 cubic kilometer. Unfortunately, the observations available measuring the fluxes across the basins, the exchange across the gateways, has very large error bars. So we have to be aware that 10,000 cubic kilometer over the time period of 20 years is not much change over the borders. It's roughly 500 cubic kilometer per year. And this is very difficult to measure, and that accuracy over all the gateways. In addition, all the observational records are pretty short. They go back to roughly 20 years only. So for covering the large scale and long range changes of freshwater content in the Arctic Ocean, which may be relevant to understand its interaction with the North Atlantic, we have to rely on models. Up to this point, the heat inflow into the Arctic Ocean has a strong role. I didn't go into detail there, especially when it comes to the surface circulation, the surface fluxes, heat loss in the Barents Sea, sea ice reduction, and the feedback with the atmosphere. I have not mentioning this in my presentation, but this is something to take into account in the discussions for sure. We also find a strong influence of this increased heat inflow on the mid-depth circulation and the potential for changes of the density structure of the Arctic Ocean, which then will have an impact on the outflows and overflows at mid-depths. And it remains to be clarified whether this actually can have an impact on the overturning circulation. Now, questions I listed from this presentation, but also a bit further, which we should try to get a hold on in the breakout group discussions. For example, what actually triggers the regional stress curl changes, the switches from cyclonic to anticyclonic dominated atmospheric stresses in the Arctic Ocean, which then in turn trigger the freshwater content, the freshwater releases. The question would have to be answered if we want to understand whether there actually is some kind of predictive potential in determining when the next freshwater release may take place. There also is the question, what is the maximum storage available or possible in the Arctic Ocean, and what are the possible maximum release rates? Because, of course, the release rate is an important factor in how the effect of the freshwater releases would be further downstream. We also should think about what are the consequences of the reduced and weaker sea ice we expect in future on the momentum transfer changes between the atmosphere and the ocean. Because if the freshwater content is as susceptible to changes in the circulation of the atmosphere, the momentum transfer is maybe a key component to consider. What is completely open still is what actually determines where the freshwater is coming out. We have these two exit gateways, which I mentioned, Fram Strait and the Canadian Archipelago, and it is known that freshwater releases through the Fram Strait have a much bigger effect on the dense water formation in the Labrador Sea as releases through the Canadian Archipelago. But what actually in the Arctic Ocean is determining whether freshwater is released here or there is something to be worked on. Another question is, what are the consequences for the increasing heat input into the Arctic over the past decades, and as prospected by many CMIP models for the future, what are the impact of the is the impact of this heat input at mid depths and the overflows? Very little has been done on that. And then this entire link from the increased heat inflow to the outflows and then the impact on the Labrador Sea dense water formation also via the surface circulation, this entire Arctic loop via ocean and atmosphere is something still not completely uncovered. And then one more question, which we might also dig into in the breakout sessions, is how well CMIP models actually represent the freshwater content changes as far as we understand them, because an analysis of this would help us understanding perhaps why some of these models have a very a very different freshwater content storage in their predictions. The same holds for very large differences between the CMIP-5 model ensemble, also with respect to heat inflow via the Barents Sea and the important feedback via the sea ice extent and then the impact on the atmospheric circulation locally in the Arctic Ocean. Okay, thank you.